Hi, I'm Peggy Schramm. I'm one of the founders of an organization called RESCUE, which is Railroad Employee Safety and Quality. We founded this organization in St. Louis, Missouri, primarily an organization of the family members and wives of railroad workers. The reason that we organized is because the railroad was becoming more and more aggressive in their attitudes toward their employees, basically the engineers and conductors, with regards to fatigue and absenteeism. What's happened is that the carriers have basically taken on a lot more intermodal traffic, and they haven't hired enough men to cover the workload. So they've been working most of these railroad employees upwards of 400 hours a month, which is pretty unreasonable. And the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration, and the unions kind of turned a deaf ear to all of this. So we took it upon ourselves to get organized, to get involved, and to start speaking out to the public about safety issues on the railroad.
Okay. So, okay, this is very interesting. This is safety issues at work, and you say that the unions aren't standing up and doing their part. Why are unions not doing their part, do you think?
Well, that's a pretty interesting question and one that we've been unable to get an answer to. Most railroad workers pay into the unions approximately, anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500 a year in union dues. And, you know, there's certain labor agreements that that provide the guidelines for the carriers and these workers to work within. But when the carriers start taking advantage of those labor agreements and, in fact, violating them, and the union doesn't take a stand against it, there's really no recourse for these guys.
Okay.
You know, there's no federal recourse or legal recourse.
Right.
But we consider, you know, the wives to be pretty active in giving these guys support and bringing attention to it. I mean, working a railroad engineer 400 hours a month is not only a safety issue for that employee, but also for the cargo that they're hauling and to the public, the communities that they pass through.
Right.
These guys are exhausted.
Right. So let's talk about, first of all, how you in particular got involved with this. Do you work on the railroad yourself?
No. My husband works on the railroad. He's what they call an old head, which is an employee of 25 years or more.
Uh-huh.
And most of the wives involved in this organization, their husbands are also old heads. And what's happened is in the last 5 years, the level of fatigue and the manpower shortage has gotten so bad that they started forcing these guys to work even longer hours. And when they couldn't or wouldn't, they started hauling them in for what they call absenteeism investigations.
So that might be grounds to fire them.
Correct.
Okay. When you were waiting for your husband, or when you were sort of watching your husband, can you describe sort of what it was like day to day? So, for instance, how much would you actually get to see him, and what was it like in terms of, you know, him coming home and then going back off to work?
Well, basically, you don't get to see them at all. My husband lives about 40 miles from his you know, where he goes and picks up his train. So in rush hour traffic, that's an hour each way. And if he gets in, let's say he gets in at 8 o'clock in the morning, he gets home at 9 o'clock in the morning, he is allowed exactly 8 hours rest.
That's a federal guideline?
Yes. That's a federal guideline. I mean, that he has to have at least 8 hours worth of rest. And they were sticking right to, I mean, to the minute, to that 8 hours. So if he's worked all night, he has an hour drive home, he gets home at 9 o'clock, there goes one of his hours. Now he's got 7 hours to do anything around the house and also get enough sleep, because he's going to be called right back out at the end of that 8 hours. So as soon as he gets home, he's got to go to bed.
So he goes to bed and he sleeps for 6 hours, because then he's got to get back in the car and go back to the train.
That's right.
Okay, so we get 6 hours of sleep a night, which really isn't 8 hours of rest.
Well, and
there's
you
no
also
personal life.
Have to be able to adjust yourself to that routine. I mean, how many guys come home from work and can go right to bed?
Right.
I mean, you might want to sit down and have a beer or watch a show. And the railroad started getting very arrogant about guys that were asking to mark off for weddings or funerals or, you know, we've had cases where a guy's wife is in for cancer surgery and they won't let him mark off to be there with her. They won't allow you to mark off for your children's graduations or basically anything.
Hmm. Can I talk a little bit more about what happens then when an engineer returns to the train and he's fatigued or she's fatigued? It seems that, you know, for someone who doesn't know much about railroads, that driving a train might not seem like a very difficult thing. You're sitting in the cab and you say go and you go down the tracks. What is it that makes driving a train a safety concern?
Well, there's a lot of aspects of safety involved with that. It takes a lot of training to become an engineer, a locomotive engineer. When you're pulling, you know, that amount of steel, sometimes a mile and a half, close to 2 miles long, a lot of these guys do it with touch and feel. You know, they can feel when the train is stressing behind them. They know how to slack off and when they can speed up. And it's not just a question of, yeah, you don't have to steer it, but you have to know how to speed up and slow down that train. It takes a lot of experience to be able to do that. And especially here in St. Louis, we have a huge problem. The run that my husband does in particular is between St. Louis and Jeff City. And the tracks are in such bad disrepair that, you know, these guys can get anywhere from 20 to 40 slow orders a trip, meaning the track is so bad that they can't maintain normal speeds. So when you have orders like that, then you have to carefully monitor your orders against where you are on the track, against your speed, against what's going on with the train. All of that, you know, all that works in concert with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that really takes human intervention, and you have to, you know, be rested and on your toes to carefully monitor all of that.
One of the safety aspects that we hear about quite a bit in Illinois is the grade level crossings where the roads cross the railroad tracks.
Right.
Is that a concern for fatigue and safety of the engineers as well?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, one thing you hardly ever hear about is when there is an accident, you always hear about the person that was on the track that got hit by the train, and you never hear anything about the train crew. And, you know, these guys, they take all of those accidents very personally. That every accident affects them very deeply. And, you know, if there's something wrong with the signaling system at that crossing, or if somebody is stuck on that track and the engineer can't stop the train, I mean, you know, they do everything they can to watch for those occurrences and try to prevent them. But when they do happen, these guys are very deeply affected, and the first thing that happens to them under any circumstance is that they get fired. You know, whether the signal failed, or, you know, whether that person was on the track and they couldn't stop the train, it doesn't matter. It's always their fault. They are always fired.
Wow. I've also heard that the engines are run with very small crews.
Yeah, they've really cut back on that. They're down to two people, the engineer and the conductor. And that's the entire crew for a train that could be a mile and a half, close to 2 miles long.
Well, so you've said that... you know, the companies are being very, very, they're speeding up the work. They're trying to make the number of engineers that they have do more and more work to reduce their labor costs and therefore increase their company's profits. Which companies are we talking about here?
Well, the one that my organization specifically is involved with right now is Union Pacific.
Okay.
But this is a problem across all of the major railroads.
Okay. And what kinds of, have you had any interaction with the company? Have you confronted them in any way?
We have a website and where you can see all the communication that we've put forth. Not only do we try to communicate with the Union Pacific, but we've been working with the FRA. We're working with state, local, county legislatures. We're trying to get as deeply involved politically, you know, on the local level and the state level as we can, because, you know, in the last 5 years, things have really gotten to a very stressful level. I mean, something's going to break pretty soon, and it's going to be pretty major, because the railroads are not maintaining the tracks. Their signaling systems are antiquated. Most of their engines are in disrepair, you know, and they're pushing their employees to the limit. So, and then, you know, the other thing that we've gotten involved with recently is called remote control technology.
Great. Can you tell us about that? Yeah.
Well, remote control technology is a locomotive with no human whatsoever on board. And the railroads have started implementing this. Union Pacific started the early part of last year. And their plan is to have these trains implemented throughout their service units, I think by the end of this year or early next year. And there's been a lot of public outcry against these, not necessarily that the technology is wrong or it's bad, but the irresponsible way in which they're implementing it.
Mm-hmm. So when I go out and I'm looking across the prairie and I see a train going down the tracks, will that be a remote-controlled train?
It could very well be.
Wow.
Now, one of the things that they'll tell you right now is that they only plan to put these in the terminal yards. But if you go and look at what a definition of a terminal yard is, you know, you think, well, DuPont, Illinois, for example, is a terminal yard. But what they define their terminal yard can be up to 25 miles in circumference of that yard. So now we're talking about the entire downtown St. Louis area, where they can run these remote-controlled trains through the city, through the little neighborhoods, across these crossings. So where you're already having trouble with all these crossings, and, you know, a lot of accidents are prevented because the engineer is on board, now they're even eliminating that aspect. So there'll be no possibility to stop an accident at a crossing.
Right. Okay. What kinds of victories have you had in your campaigns?
Well, one of the things that we got here in St. Louis pretty quickly, we started attending these investigations for absenteeism.
Mm-hmm.
And we told the carrier, you know, you either give us a definition of how many hours these guys have to work or back off, because they can't work these hours and live. And here in St. Louis, because the wives got involved and we did go in there and demand better, you know, quality of life for these guys and put the safety on the table, they backed off of the investigations here in St. Louis and they brought more men in.
Uh-huh. So you succeeded in getting some of the changes you wanted.
Right. But the problem is, if you don't stay on top of it and keep monitoring it all the time, They'll just pull those men right back out of service and have everything right back where it was.
Mm-hmm. Are you trying to put pressure onto the company, and you've succeeded in that respect in some ways? Have you also been trying to put pressure on the unions themselves to try to put these changes into the contractual language?
Well, unfortunately, you know, I don't have a strong background in labor. You know what it takes to get those labor agreements and whatnot. And the unions are so busy fighting amongst themselves, and, you know, they're I don't know what to say about the unions. I'm extremely disappointed in them. Our message to them is lead or get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as far as I'm concerned, we might as well take that $1,000 a year and throw it in the fireplace. Because, and in all fairness, you know, the Railroad Labor Act, back when Reagan was in the office, they pretty much clamped down on the unions and took away their ability to strike.
Mm-hmm.
So once they did that, they kind of rendered the union useless. Because if you can't strike, if you can't protect yourself that way, what recourse do you have? Like in my husband's case, he's been working 4 years without a contract. You know, and there's no pressure on the carrier to have to sign another contract for these guys. They haven't had pay raises in 10 years. You know, and the unions don't have, they don't have any punch or any power anymore to go after the carrier. So these guys, you know, the ones that are really suffering are the employees. And then because they're worked to exhaustion, the public is going to suffer.
Right.
So it just, I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Right. Peggy, how many people are involved in your organization in rescue?
I would say we have about 2,000 supporters nationwide now. So, and, you know, we are going strong after this remote control issue to try to educate the public. This thing has tentacles into fatigue, into rail crossings, I mean, into every aspect of railroad safety. And we're not saying that we want to eliminate the technology. We're saying we want communities to ban the use of this technology until we get a positive response from the FRA and the carriers that they're going to implement it safely and responsibly. And because, you know, we are wise and we know these guys that are out there working with this technology, I can tell you personally that there are incidents that are going on out there that are being covered up and hidden. And when the carriers say, oh, this is safe, they're not telling you the truth because they are not reporting all of the incidences that are occurring with this technology. It's pretty scary. In Kansas City, they had an incident where the engine derailed and one of the cars that was involved was hauling hazardous waste. Well, the carrier immediately pulled other trains around the incident. They escorted reporters away from the property, and they confiscated employees' cameras. So when you have stuff like that going on, and you know about it, you know firsthand about it, it's pretty important, I think, to let the public know.
All right. Well, we're certainly fortunate to have you out there. Peggy, can you give us some resources for if people want to get in touch with you or if they want to learn more about railroad safety and rescue?
Sure. Our website is rresq.com. And if you go to that website, you'll find my name with my email and several other contacts around the country.
Okay, so if people want to get involved or if they want to join your organization, they can do it through the website, which is rresq.com.
That's correct.
All right. Was there anything else that you wanted to add today, Peggy?
Well, I just think it's real important that, people realize the nature of railroad safety. I mean, the railroad is a very, very important integral part of our American economy. And until I got involved with my husband, I didn't know anything about the railroad. And now that I do, I really think it's important that everybody else know about it because it's, you know, I really feel like the corporate executives are raping our railroads. You know, they're putting all the money in their pockets and in their stockholders' pockets, and they're not putting those profits back into improving our railroads. And I think that's very important to us.
Okay, Peggy Schrum, thank you very much for your time today.
Okay.